Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome to Homeschool Companion. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and today I have a story for the kids called Lucy and the Light by Kay Heinstand. By now, Lucy was so worried that she could hardly keep from crying. She sat down on a large rock by the shore to watch for her father. The waves splashed higher and higher as the sun began to set and the shadows lengthened. Lucy had right to worry, for her father was the lighthouse keeper, and he had never before been away from his duty at night. Lucy and her father lived on a small rocky island where a tall lighthouse guarded that part of the Atlantic Ocean. In her father's hands rested the responsibility for keeping the lamp to warn the great ships to steer clear of the dangerous rocks. This day, as he had done many times before, Father had taken his small boat and gone to the mainland to buy supplies. Dusk was now creeping in, and still there was no sign of him. She moved back a little and strained her eyes to see over the white foam. Lucy had always been a timid child. She had no friends, for she led a very lonely life on the little island. As daylight faded, Lucy knelt and prayed for God to tell her what she ought to do. Should she light the lamp? When she rose to her feet, she felt filled with courage. Her heart was eased, and she knew what she must do. Going into the lighthouse, taking a long taper and matches, she began to climb the steep, winding stairs. But Lucy had a secret problem. Lucy was terribly afraid of heights. Imagine a lighthouse keeper's daughter who feared high places. Well, I can certainly relate to that. Lucy had tried very hard to overcome her fear, and she didn't think her father had even guessed it. On this lonely, stormy night, it took a lot of courage to climb those steep stairs alone, but up she went. She tried to shield the flickering candle with her body. This was long before everyone had electric lights. Grasping the cold metal railing, she climbed as quickly as she could, not once daring to look down into the depths below. Reaching the platform at the top of the tower, she studied the large light for a moment. She had watched her father light it many times, but she had never done it by herself. It was almost dark now, and the wind was raging in a fury. Angry waves pounded against the lighthouse so that it trembled. With a deep breath, Lucy lit the long taper. Standing on tiptoe, she lit all the big burners. A prayer for help slipped from between her lips as she adjusted the valves and waited for the pressure to build up. Then, as the large lantern flared into life, bright and clear and glowing, flashing out for miles across the ocean, she cried with all her heart, "Thank you, God!" And her cheeks were wet with tears of tension and relief. All that night, Lucy waited. Her worry over her father's absence and her fear that the light might fail kept her awake. When at dawn the fury of the wind and the waves subsided, Lucy took up her watch on the shore again. There at last was Father's small boat coming through the gray mists. She ran into her father's arms as soon as he beached the boat. "Thank God, my child, that you lit the lamp," he cried, stroking her fair hair. "What happened, Father? Are you hurt or ill?" She hugged him tightly. "Two men stopped me at my boat yesterday afternoon. They detained me by force so I couldn't get home to light the lamp. They kept me prisoner in a small shed. They belonged to a gang that planned to rob ships that would be wrecked on the rocky coast when there was no light to warn them off. But when the men saw the light come on, they knew that their plan had failed and they let me go. But I didn't dare cross the rough water at night. Oh, Lucy, I'm so proud of you. I was worried and frightened, Father, and I could never have done it alone." Lucy brushed back her hair from her forehead. She stood tall and straight, and the shadows of the night's fear were gone from her eyes. "You didn't do it alone?" her father exclaimed, his eyes searching the shore. "Who was with you?" "My God is the rock of my refuge. Lucy quoted softly. His hand guided me, his strength gave me strength, and his presence cast out all fear. Father looked at his daughter, and there was a gentle benediction in his eyes. We are never alone. It makes me very happy to see that you have learned this great truth. And that verse was taken from Psalms 94:22. Without any further ado, let me introduce to you Andrew Mills. It's been at least 2 years since you've been on our show.
That sounds about right.
And we want to know, who is Andrew? What? Tell us a little bit about your growing up years.
Well, I was born to my parents, Steve and Jane, in October of 1993 in Southern Maryland, if anyone knows where Waldorf is. Well, I was born in D.C., but I think. I don't know where I was born. America. Let's just go with that. And I grew up in a townhouse in Waldorf for many, many years, at least a decade and a half, maybe. Then I moved to Hughesville and lived there for about another 10 years. And then a little change of pace, we moved out of Southern Maryland and up to Hagerstown, Maryland, which I got to admit is very nice. Not as many cars, not as many, what's the word?
Rude people?
Maybe I shouldn't say that on the air, but it's really nice mountains here, too. And I was, up until I moved here, I was homeschooled from first grade. Then I went to public school for 1 year in the same grade to try and get me used to being in real school. Real school, I say that like homeschooling's not good.
Yeah, you better not say that, huh?
But it is really good. And I left public school and went back to homeschooling until my senior year when I came to Highland View Academy. Hello, room 113. 213?
213.
213, I'm sorry. Yes, hello, room 213. How are you? It's been a while. 2 years, actually.
So we are interviewing you in a classroom. And I think one of the things that drew me to you was, of course, you're very outgoing and you're very warm and friendly to everyone who comes in your path. I mean, it's a gift that God's given to you. Tell us a little bit about what happened in those early years that changed your life forever.
Well, this is why I'm here. It's a when I was born, well, my parents say that when I was born, I was medically perfect, whatever that means. I mean, I was human, so yeah. But then when I was 2 years old, 2 years and 3 months old, I fell off this bench, small, like low-to-the-ground bench, in a McDonald's playground room, the McPlay place, as they call it. I stay out of that place now. And I hit my head on the slate floors under it and burst a major blood vessel in my brain and had a stroke. So they had to go in and actually, if you're queasy, turn the sound down for the next 5 seconds.
Okay.
Now, they had to cut open my head and put it back on to release the pressure. Turn it back up now. Hello? Turn it back up now. Come on.
Okay, do you have any pictures of that?
We did, but I think my mom burned them all.
You know, we are saying this with joy, and that joy is only a miracle because God gives us joy even in the worst of adversity. So does your mom or your father ever recount to you some of the feelings that they felt after this had happened?
They have before, but I can only imagine how they feel was very sad, depressed, because their son, their only son, by the way, I have three sisters. It's their fault. Their only son, who was, I guess, really funny, that's all I can think of, had this horrible accident that changed him forever. I couldn't use my, since I had the head injury, I wasn't able to use my left hand or my left leg. I had a blind spot in the left sides of both my eyes. So what it's classified is hemiplegia. And I also have epilepsy, if anyone knows what that is. And hopefully you do, because there's a doctor in this radio show. She probably talked about it a little, right? I've been here before.
I love that you're, just sharing with us all of the medical terms, because we do have listeners that are dealing with hemiplegia and epilepsy.
And there's also probably some with cerebral palsy.
Yes.
And let's see. Let me just throw in some more terms. Grand mal is what I have, or tonic clonic maybe. There's different types of seizures. There's grand mal, which are the big ones where you lose complete control like I do. And then there's petite mal. I don't know what I'm talking about.
No, you're doing fine. I know exactly. I have students.
What are petite mals?
Well, you can look, like you're kind of out of it.
Okay, yeah. That's just like absent seizures. And I have the grand mals, and I think they're tonic-clonic, too. What's that classification? I'm having you tell me about what
I
have.
Well, I'm not sure about the tonic-clonic. I'm not sure about that. But we can, we can do
figure
some further investigation. And so your parents then now had a child that some would consider severely handicapped.
What does that word mean?
I don't know. Or severely disabled. Or severely challenged. The words change with different...
Personally? Mm-hmm. Physically awesome.
That's right.
Is that okay?
That's okay.
Let's just
I mean, you are physically awesome, because I believe that they were told that you wouldn't be able to walk. Tell us about that.
My parents were told I wouldn't be able to walk or talk.
Hoo-hoo!
And now they're sort of depressed that I can talk. Because, well, whoever hears me.
That's right.
I've even come up with many ways to do things with one hand, like tie my shoes with one hand, play video games with one hand. It's easier than you think. It just, for some reason, mind boggles people. I don't understand how they do it with two.
Well, and I also... You were a very good bell player in my bells.
That's because you put all the bells on a tree and gave me a mallet.
But that's okay, because that's a legitimate way to do bells, is to tree them.
But it's harder to muffle them.
That's
in
right.
That, way. That was what I was having the most
but
trouble
you,
with.
But you developed a way of doing it with the back of your hand.
Yeah. Thank you, by the way. Do you still have that?
Yeah, I still have that, but I don't have a bell choir.
So start one.
Yeah. You need some bells to start it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that, though, by the way.
Yes, I enjoyed it, too. So you've gone... You probably... This happened so young in your life that you can't imagine yourself being any other way.
You see, that's the thing. When something happens to you when you're young, it's less devastating on you and your physical and emotional state than if it happened to you when you're older. I know some people who had strokes when they were older, and it's much harder for them to deal with it. And they're depressed all the time. Then I've got some friends that are younger, or were younger when they had their strokes, and are doing just fine. And then again, it also depends on the individual, whether they want to take it positively or take it like, oh my goodness, this horrible thing happened to me. Everyone else can do things like this with both hands, and I'm stuck doing it with one. Actually, most people can't even do this. For anyone who doesn't know, I'm doing weird things with my
fingers.
Yeah,
he's doing a, what is it, a Spock?
No. This is Spock.
Oh, well, you did Spock
this,
and then...
And it's not Spock, it's Live Long and Prosper for anyone who knows Star Trek.
So he's doing Live Long and Prosper symbol.
And then closing it up and then...
And then opening the middle and the...
The thumb, the index, and the pinky are out. Yes. The two middle ones, the ring and the middle finger, are stuck together.
Yeah.
And I'm going back and forth between them much faster than she can. She's trying, though. That's good. High five.
Me with a little practice. Well, we got to take a break right here, but when we come back, I want to talk about what you've become a spokesperson for in your own right. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm talking with Andrew Mills, and we have just gone through his history, you know, starting out as this medically termed perfect child, and then having this tragic accident in a fast food restaurant, and how he is so positive and so engaging. I can't help but think that in spite of your adversity, whatever it may be, you have taken and you have so many gifts that you have given to in particular, to forward the message about childhood stroke. And so tell us a little bit about the organization that you continue to support and speak for.
Now, she can't pronounce this, but Childhood Hemiplegia, or no, Children's Hemiplegia and Stroke Association is an organization that I've been supporting for about 3 years now. Let me tell you how it all started.
Yes.
I was coming to HVA, and they told me I couldn't wear a wristband. So I set up an awareness day for CHASA, Children's Hemiplegia and Stroke Association, and wore eight on each wrist every single day for the rest of the year. Why? I don't know.
And not only that, you got a lot of other people wearing them too. Have you kept track of how many you have sold through the, you know, over the past couple of years?
I actually brought all of them.
I actually brought all of the rest of the ones with me that I have. I bought 600, and this is what I have left of the 600.
Wow.
I buy them 200 at a time, but I bought 400, and then this is the rest of the 600 that I've bought. And these have the website on them now, too.
Yes.
Here, take one.
Okay, I'm putting on a wristband. Well, you know, the awareness that you have brought, not only did you do an awareness at your school site, but then you went on to the local junior college. What have you done there?
Well, nothing I was allowed to be doing. You're apparently not supposed to be selling even charity things on a college campus without the approval of the school board, and they have to handle the money.
Oh, so that's awkward.
So then I went back to selling them just at the bus stop. By the way, I take the bus. And I sell a lot of them there. You'd be amazed how many people at a bus stop who don't have a car and have to take the bus have $2 to spare.
And it's wonderful. I mean, it's, you have taken something and you've said, okay, I can do this. And so then how you take the money and then you send it to CHASA?
Yes. Well, I write a check to CHASA. I keep the money, but I write a check. That's not bad, is it?
No, so do you know how much money you've sent to CHASA over the last couple of years, a rough figure?
$1,000. That is amazing to me.
It is amazing.
I can't believe I sold that many.
That is absolutely amazing.
But I also do take into account that sometimes I try to sell one to someone and they say no, but give me $20.
Well, that's fine.
It's
fine.
So that frees me up to do things like give you a wristband for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then
I carry your message, you know, worldwide.
Across the waves.
Yes, and we have no way of knowing someone who listens to this message, if they go to CHASA, there they can donate. We have no idea, you know, if your story prompted that, and we'll never know until we get to heaven.
Or until the founder of CHASA sends me a message and says thank you.
Okay. Yeah. But they might not know. They just might not know what they might think someone just donated, you know, out of the goodness of their heart. They might not know they heard your story.
I also, in reference to the stroke that I had, I wanted to show you a teddy bear that I got from, I think it was Johns Hopkins when I was doing the hospital stay thing. I named him Brody Bear.
So how long have you had that bear?
Let's see, almost 19 years.
Wow.
Feeling me soft.
Beautiful. He's a beautiful bear.
And I've put all the wristbands that I've purchased in the past. And one of them was more of a lighter purple, or as some people call it, pink. Mm-hmm. Does that look pink to you? Magenta?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. And then the other one's my class wristband. Class of 2012, HVA. Highland View Academy, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah. And let's see if I have CHASA.org. That's O-R-G, yeah. Children with hemiplegia or cerebral palsy that have suffered a stroke as a child. Someone who suffered a stroke as a child in your family. I think it's 1 in 4,000.
Yeah.
So as we conclude the show, what spiritually keeps you going? I mean, you are so full of joy and such a privilege to be my friend.
Two verses stick out to me the most. Well, three. One of them is the very last verse in Revelation, because then it's over. the other two are, I'm pretty sure it's 1 Corinthians 13:12 or 12:13. I'm pretty sure it's 13:12. For now we see in part, but then shall we see in whole. For now we see through a glass dimly, but then face to face. And then my favorite of the two is, you've heard this before, Romans 8:28. For we know that all things work together for the good of those who love God, to those who are the called according to his purpose.
Amen. And has anybody ever told you have a wonderful radio voice?
Two people today. but I don't believe him. And also, in reference to my last interview I did with you, you said, is there anything you can't do? I remember that, correct?
Yes.
And I said, I can't fly.
Yes.
I learned how to fly. Well, spiritually at least.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. And I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless. You've been listening to Homeschool Companion. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure and like us on Facebook at Homeschool Companion. Or partner with us. Send us a contribution or a show suggestion at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Or call us at 301-824-3162.